morning, 6:39 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Got a surprise for you today. Normally, we would be talking to Brad Baker, Santa Rosa County Administrator Brad Baker, but he is out for the day. And yesterday, actually, the agenda in the regular meeting was relatively light. But there was an extra meeting yesterday, the Land Development Code meeting, the LDC. And I told you already that Santa Rosa County has approved the non-necessity of having chain link fences on the retention ponds if they are of a certain depth or of a certain slope. And this is a hallelujah moment for me. Thank God. Now, Escambia, come on. Come on, let's get on board. Anyway, but Jared Lowe, who is the assistant county administrator, is joining us now. Jared, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, Andrew. Good morning. How are you?
I'm so excited about the chain link fence thing. I really am. I'm so excited about this. Like years of complaining, and finally, and I know I was not the only one. There's a lot of people. It's a good decision. Anyway,
you are not alone.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But you guys did a lot of stuff in this meeting last night that is important to a lot of people, and I wanted to have you on to kind of summarize it. So let's get into some of these issues. Clear cutting, land clearing, tree cutting, all of that stuff, that has been changed. So you tell me what was the old and what is the new? What changed as far as clearing land?
Yeah, so in the code that was being amended last night, there had been some vague language about the clearing of subdivisions. The intent in some previous changes was trying to reduce the amount of total clearing of a site prior to structures being built. But what was amended, what's been added, and this is all a part of that Land Development Code task force that took place earlier in the year, was to provide for a specific phasing approach for the clearing of residential lots. So rather, and this applies to most circumstances, there's some really limited circumstances where if it's going to negatively impact your drainage infrastructure. But in most circumstances, you have to have a phased approach to clearing a subdivision. So you clear out an area for the utilities, you clear an area for the holding pond, you have a stockpile area for the fill that you're bringing out of the pond that you're digging. But you have to do a phased approach, and you have to provide that plan to the county. It has to be engineered. And it's just a way to make sure that we're limiting the areas where an entire subdivision is wiped clear prior to the development. And, you know, a lot of people refer to that as clear cutting. So we've done a lot to try to shore that up. And in some of those same sections of the code, we've adopted some parameters from DEP related to erosion control and sediment, which is a different topic altogether. But we've kind of lumped all that in to try to have a more thoughtful clearing for development.
Great. So part of this would be the aesthetic value, but I know that's not the primary thing. It seems to me the primary thing is where people would go in and clear, and then you're waiting 4 years before any construction actually happens. Is that kind of the general intent?
That's exactly it, Andrew. You know, there's a subdivision that's kind of famous for this, Lakes of Woodbine, Woodbine and Pace, where it was cleared, and then there was financing issues for the project, and it just sat vacant for a very long time. So this is trying to eliminate that sort of thing. So if there is an issue with the project progressing, you don't have a bunch of raw land and raw sediment just sitting out there until the project commences back.
Did anything happen that changes the end result of how much of the tree presence gets cleared, or did that all get left the same? Because I know if we slow it, phase it, I mean, that's better, of course. But if the end result is, you know, the developers claim, you have to really cut so much because if you raise the land by... There's all kinds of issues. Did we really change any of the end result deforestation, or did that all kind of stay the same?
A lot of that stayed the same, but there's been some fruitful conversations in some of the meetings leading up to this one about being able to use our tree mitigation fund to try to make sure we have more canopy trees on site, especially on public properties, you know, if it's a common area. So there's still some conversations to be had relative to that, but last night was specifically about the clearing leading up to development.
Great. That's great news. And I know people will care a lot about that. That's why I wanted to talk about it today. We're talking to Jared Lowe, Santa Rosa County Assistant Administrator at the LDC meeting last night. And these, by the way, these are final decisions. This is not going to come back to the...
That's correct.
This is done. Like, this is in law now.
Correct. That was a public hearing, so it'll get the ordinance relative to it. Will get signed by the chairman, the clerk of court, goes to the Secretary of State, and then it's codified in law.
Perfect. Sediment control and runoff was also, you talked about a moment ago. What was changed here? Because that's obviously with Mulat Bayou. In general, all the waterways, we care deeply about those, and some people do great and some people don't do great. But what changed?
So there was a lot of housekeeping we had to do to allow us to better enforce some codes about sedimentation.
Okay.
You know, there's a couple of other regulatory agencies that we had tended to lean on in the past, one being water management, and they have what they call ERP, Environmental Resource Permitting Process. And we had some references to that program, but they were very, very specific. And then water management would change that specific reference. And so we'd try to enforce it. We'd go to court and they'd say, well, that reference isn't even the thing that you're looking at right now. So we made that a little more generic. And then we incorporated, DEP has a manual. It's a 202-page manual that tells you exactly how to do erosion control. So we say, you know, let's just adopt to that. That's what the state's using as their gold standard. And that gives us something to better enforce issues related to erosion control and sedimentation. So that made a pretty big, I think that's another tool in the tool belt for code enforcement to be able to better regulate that sort of thing.
Okay.
And a lot of that, of course, stems from Avalon Beach area, some of the issues we had about this time last year. And then, you know, one of the interesting things that we changed, so...
And by the way, just on the sediment stuff, that just means that the regulations or guidance or restrictions, however you want to characterize it, is tighter and more in line with state guidelines. But also,
absolutely,
you've empowered enforcement on the back end by making the statute more amenable to enforcement. So it's both on both sides of this. That's great news. Last night, the LDC meeting where the county commission actually ratified some of the recommendations from the Land Development Code Revision Commission. I kind of interrupted you. You were about to add something. I think it was maybe on more sediment stuff, but maybe it's something else. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the issues we had in Avalon Beach and, you know, other areas like Florida Town, where it's a 100-year-old platted subdivision, it exists on paper, but many of the roads that are on the plat aren't actually built out. So we put some parameters in place where somebody wishing to develop property, we can't keep you from getting to your property. You have property rights and a right to it. But you can't go in and wipe out an entire platted right-of-way, tear through wetlands, remove any existing infrastructure if there is any. So we put some controls related to that to try to minimize some of the issues we had in Avalon Beach last year. We think that's going to be fruitful going forward as well.
Good. Okay. Also, I thought I read a part where there was a durational limit on plats or plans of some kind, that if something doesn't get built in a certain amount of time, that basically the plan reverts away. Did I read that right?
So that was specific to commercial site plans.
Okay.
The way the code previously read was that if you had a site plan approval, you had 5 years to actually execute on it. And then the way the code read was that if you requested an extension, you could have another 5 years. So at a base, if you had a site plan for a commercial property, that could exist for 10 years without any real action by the county.
Okay.
So the way it reads now is that it's active for 2 years. And then upon expiration, you can request an extension. It's not automatic. You have to request it, and it has to be requested by the Board of County Commissioners. So then it's a matter of policy as to whether the site plan is going to be extended.
Right.
That's specific for commercial properties.
Since you are the expert in this area, I'm going to ask you kind of a wing-nutty question that I have long wondered about. All the time, in both counties, in all their municipalities, the conversation goes like this. There's a zoning, and somebody wants to change the zoning in order to create the ability to do a new project. But and the ruling body, the governing body, is concerned because they're kind of for the project, but they're not in favor of the zoning change that would allow it, because they're worried that if the project then doesn't get done, they've changed the zoning and allowed other things within that zone that they would not approve of. Is there any, and they obviously they're worried about things like spot zoning and all that, but is there any way to write these either zonings or development plans such that the zoning is dependent on this project getting completed and then it goes away, it sunsets after two? Is there any legal remedy to write something like that?
You know, I'm not an attorney, Andrew, but I do sit next to one a few times a week at our meetings.
Yes.
And I know something that's been talked about is being able to put together a developer agreement. So basically it would say, this is the project you're going to do, these are the parameters, and there may be some reverter clause if you don't execute on that specific project. So there's some options out there. I don't know that we've used it before, but you may see some of that coming forward in the future.
Because it seems like that's what, and I mean, every governing body, it seems like they run into this problem, they have this conversation, and that kind of a solution is what they're screaming for, even if they don't know it. And I was just curious if that was something that, you know, you guys have or you're looking at or whatever. So, you know, good to hear the conversation. As you say, you sit next to a pretty capable attorney, although he's retiring. Fine.
That's
fine.
That's the rumor.
Yeah, Tom Danheiser retiring. And you got your new attorney on board who's going to take over for him. A couple other questions about the LDC stuff. that might be of interest to at least some people, you change the setbacks and the lot widths. And in Ag RR and in AG1 and AG2, you changed it from 70 feet width to 125 feet width. I assume this is meant to get rid of the what I call the cigarette land parcels, where it's so narrow that once you put a house on it, you literally can't even get to the backyard with any kind of equipment. It's meant to eliminate that kind of development, that kind of platting. Is that right?
That's right. And we actually ended up at 100 feet. You know, we started at 125 feet, but there was a recommendation from the zoning board to kind of meet in the middle at 100 feet. So
okay.
That's what we ended up with. But you're right. It's to try to eliminate those really thin lots where it may be an acre in size, but it's so thin that you don't have room in the sides of the structures to allow for swales, for stormwater. And, you know, they're kind of problematic when you see a bunch of those lumped together in one area.
Oh, that's I hadn't been thinking about that, but the stormwater and the swales. Yeah, I can see why that would, because, you know, water often needs the opportunity to run to the front or the back, depending on how the land works between houses. That's a good point. But also setbacks is another thing that you guys increased in those same zones. The document says 35 to 45. Sounds like there might have been some adjustments, but that's from the curb to the front of the structure, so that in these areas there will be more land in the front of the development. Is that right?
That's right. And again, it's to try to make sure that the lot is more usable for the end user. And so, of course, that setback is from the edge of your property line to the front of the structure. And just like with the lot widths, it was for Ag-RR, Ag-1, and Ag-2.
Very good. The other thing, and I know this has been for some people a big conversation point, is the conservation communities, which, as I understand it, this is sort of similar to what they're trying to do with Jubilee. It's not the same exact thing, but it's sort of similar. That's to allow denser development on a portion of a property in exchange for not developing other portions of the property. Is that's what conservation communities are, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the gist of it. And of course, Jubilee was a separate matter altogether. I know some of the conversations in the public sphere kind of lumped the two together, but they were two distinctly different things.
Okay.
But you're right. The structure is that you can take your overall density and cluster it towards one portion of the property. So your net density does not increase, but you do have a little bit of a density increase in one section of your property. And the exchange is you then leave a portion of the property in perpetual conservation for the public use.
And the goal of this, for people who might not be familiar, is that if you say you take 1,000 acres of ag land and it's an acre per house, well, you're going to get 1,000 houses. Well, I mean, it doesn't quite work out that way, but let's say you're going to get 1,000, got to take out for streets, but you're going to get 1,000 houses all sitting on an acre with all this wasted land in between them that people just have to mow. But instead, if you can cluster that onto, you know, a couple hundred acres, you're going to get more dense development, 4 or 5 maybe per acre. But then the rest of the land is open and, you know, can not be used, but is preserved, even could be farmed on, right? That's kind of the idea.
That's the idea. And it's been used all over the country. You know, there's different versions of this, even in Florida. So this is just an opportunity to have developments a little bit more flexible and the end goal to save some land mass to be available as an amenity to the public.
Does it have a limit on the maximum density or the type of development in the, congealed areas? You know, could you have multifamily, or is it all single family detached? I don't know what the parameters are. That's why I'm asking.
I like the phrase congealed. That's a good description of it. So your max density and your type of housing has to match the existing zoning.
Okay.
So you mentioned multifamily. Multifamily is a commercial project,
okay.
So that wouldn't be allowable. It'd have to be single family residential and line up with the density of your parcel for the project. So
okay.
That, none of that changes. That would be a rezoning. That would require a public hearing and action of the board. So it would have to match what's currently allowable by right on the property.
Very
just
good.
Congealed or clustered.
I know it's going to come back on me. You're going to use congealed in the meeting. That's going to be funny. Last thing, Jared, anything else we missed? Any other big notes from the LDC meeting last night, other than that we got rid of the requirement to have chain link fences around the low sloped or low depth ponds, which, hallelujah, thank God. Well done. Now us gaming needs to follow suit. But anyway, anything other than that?
You know, I think the big thing, Andrew, that I want people to know was that we had a task force of 11 members from the public, from different sectors, different lines of work. They came together earlier this year and put a lot of these recommendations into place. And such a good collaborative effort. You know, we see a lot of examples of people not working together and government not working, but this is a highlight of a group of people coming together and then ultimately making some changes to regulation that saves a little money for the taxpayer, provides a better end product for the consumer, and it's just a positive thing that I certainly want to highlight.
I love it. And as you know, everybody maybe doesn't know, but you know, this was individuals and builders and environmentalists, and everybody was working together on this thing, and so it was a real collaboration of interests that sometimes just wind up either yelling at each other or talking past each other a lot. So it was good to see that work. And you're right, it's good government in action, and you're going to have a better county because of it. Jared Lowe is the Santa Rosa County Assistant Administrator. Jared, thanks for the time. I appreciate you explaining some of this stuff to us. You did a great job for your first appearance here on the Pensacola Morning News. Hope we'll have many more in the future. But Jared Lowe, Santa Rosa County Assistant Administrator, thanks for the time, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care.